Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Explanation of the Vedic Path, Text 31. Shabnopamam manam lokam asantam shavanapriyam asisho hridi sankalpa chajyanchata yitavanik shabnopamam manam lokam Santam Shavanapriyam Sisha Hridi Sankalpya Shajyantya Tanyatavanik Sabnopamam Mamum Lokam Santam Shavanapriyam Asisha Hridi Sankalpya Chajanjatan Yathavanik Swapna, a dream. Upamam, equal to. Amum, that. Lokam, world after death. Asantam, unreal. Shavanapriyam, only enchanting to hear about. Asishaha, mundane achievements in this life. Ridhi, in their hearts. Sankalpya, imagining. Chajanti, they give up. Atan, their wealth. Yata, like. Vanik, a businessman. Translation. Just as a foolish businessman gives up his real wealth in useless business speculation. Foolish persons give up all that is actually valuable in life and instead pursue promotion to material heaven, which, although pleasing to hear about, is actually unreal like a dream. Such bewildered persons imagine within their hearts that they will achieve all material blessings. Purport. All over the world, people are working hard to achieve perfect sense gratification in this life or the next. As eternally living beings, part and parcel of Lord Krishna, we are naturally endowed with all bliss and knowledge in the association of the Lord. But giving up this exalted position of spiritual bliss and knowledge, we foolishly waste our time pursuing the phantasmagoria of bodily happiness, just like a foolish businessman who squanders his real assets in imaginary business ventures that deliver no real profit. I'll read the verse again. Svapnopamam mamum lokam asantam shavanapriyam asisho hridi sankalpya sajantyatam yathavanik. Just as a foolish businessman gives up his real wealth in useless business speculation, foolish persons give up all that is actually valuable in life and instead pursue promotion to material heaven, which, although pleasing to hear about, is actually unreal like a dream. Such bewildered persons imagine within their hearts that they will achieve all material blessings. Om agyan dhimilam tisha dhinam dhina salakaya chakshuram mintam jena tasma shi gribi namaha. So Srila Prabhupada used to say that we should make the best use of a bad bargain. In the material world, everything is a bad bargain. That's the point. So there's no possibility of finding profit. It is just a bad bargain. And but still, we have to recognize it as a bad bargain and just make the best use of it. but we shouldn't be foolish thinking that there is a good bargain to be found in material existence. So, here it's described in this verse that Shravana Priyam Asantam Shravana Priyam, that the happiness in this world, which is like a dream, is only enchanting to hear about. So there are actually many Vedic scriptures which describe that one can somehow or another achieve higher and higher levels of sense gratification and sense pleasure and material opulence and material enjoyment in this world. So such things are very, such Vedic literatures, and not just Vedic literatures, but even mundane literatures, of course, are very pleasing to hear. Everyone would like to hear, yes, this is the way that you will increase your wealth, your, you know, beautiful home. You can live in a heavenly place, either in this world or the next world. Everyone likes to hear such things. Everyone is attracted, but that is about the most benefit that you will get. It is nice to hear about, and after that, there's no real profit. So it's just something that you enjoy hearing, but then there's nothing. Just like a dream. So we see that the real asset in anywhere is the spirit soul, that which is spirit. The material aspect of life has no real asset. It's only valuable if we utilize the material body in order to realize our spiritual nature and our eternal relationship with Krishna. Otherwise it has no value. But the real asset is the spirit soul. So we see people like Ravana. Ravana was a very apparently very qualified person. He was the son of a Brahmana. So we see that many people, of course, these days, you know, they're very proud if they're, you know, born in a Brahmana family. So Ravana was one such person. Very, very wealthy and very, very expert in, more expert than they are in material advancement than they are today. Because Ravana used to build his palaces and his kingdom out of gold. Very, very opulent, you can only imagine. And Srila Prabhupada describes that from the various statements in Shastra, Srila Prabhupada concluded that I think it was Vibhishan who was living on the other, Ravana's brother was living on the other side of the planet, and that he was helping Ravana to extract gold. So Srila Prabhupada was saying that in essence it's stating that in Brazil, Ravana had the ability to they tunneled through from Ceylon through to the other side of the world, Brazil, and they used to extract the gold and take it through there in order to build his kingdom. So you can imagine how advanced they were materially to do such a thing. And he was, very knowledgeable in Shastra, in the Vedic literatures, very powerful. In many respects, but there was one fault, and that is that he actually didn't care for Ram. He didn't care for God. He didn't care for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And for that one fault, everything else, all his other qualifications become useless. And he was very expert, but still he couldn't surpass the laws of Ram. He decided that why perform pious activities and follow religious principles in order to attain the heavenly planets? I will just build a staircase to heaven, which he failed. And we see Ravana is very much like the modern scientists. Many of them they take birth in families with wealth and knowledge and position, and this gives them the ability to become very well educated and in material sciences, and they become so expert that they can, their plan is, of course, to inhabit. They're already making plans that the universe will be one big tourist park. soon though, even before, because there are many things that they'll never be able to do, but they will be selling tickets. Already people have foolishly, bought tickets to go to the moon and this, that and the other. But all the different moons that circumambulate the different planets all the way out to Pluto and what have you, they all have their different features which they're analysing as attractive, features in order to attract people to pay big amounts of money and travel, out to space and back again. So this is their plan. Of course, it's all a big dream. But, their mentality is the same as Ravan. We don't really need to worry about the spiritual aspect of life. We don't need to tap into, understand that we are a spirit soul in order to be happy. And we certainly don't need to develop a relationship with the Supreme Lord in order to be happy. We will become just so expert materially that we will be just, anything that is troubling us, we will just solve it through our material knowledge, material expertise, and we'll become happy here and forget about God. We don't have to go back to heaven, we don't have to go back to the spiritual world. We'll just live here in the material world. And through our science, we'll keep these bodies going forever. There are different places where people, when they die, rather than being buried or cremated, they get suspended in, cryogenic suspension or something. They freeze them, and their plan is, they believe, of course, the scientists that, one day they will unfreeze them and inject them with the chemicals that make them come alive, and then they will just keep living forever and ever. And as different parts of the body, drop off, they will just get another one attached, bionic arms and eyes and So they actually believe like this, that they will just somehow or another materially, you know, accomplish happiness. So, you know, these things are very nice to hear about, but they're a dream. They will never happen. For those who understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that no one can surpass His laws. In fact, all they really do is, you know, through their, the more, all their so-called qualifications are actually zeros. They all add up to zero when there's, the real asset is their own spiritual nature and the relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the real spiritual asset, but they neglect that. So, there's a verse, of course, in the Srimad Bhagavatam that states that those words which describe all these different topics but do not describe the glories of the Lord who can actually sanctify the universe, they're like a place of pilgrimage for the crows. So we generally see that crows like to inhabit places where there is all sorts of rubbish and you know, unmentionable things. And they sort of pick at this, you know, rubbish and decaying matter and what have you. This is a place of pilgrimage for crows. So, persons who are spiritually dead, they're like these crow-like persons. They have no knowledge of the spiritual aspect of life, and they are like these crow-like persons, and they love to hear and discuss all these topics which are devoid of any glorification of the Supreme Lord. And those literatures, because they have no spiritual value, they are considered dead literatures. So even though they are quite often embellished and decorated in so many wonderful ways, it is like the decoration of a dead body. So we see, you know, many of the documentaries that you may see, you know, they're very expert with their computer enhanced images. You know, they'll say a few scientific words and they will show you these, you know, beautiful pictures of what they believe it may be like on such and such a planet and what they believe how it may be in the future. And you know, you've got this beautiful music and computer enhanced pictures, and you know, everything is, you know, beautifully decorated, but ultimately those topics are completely devoid of any real value, of any real life. There's no spiritual topics. So spirit is life, and because they're devoid of any topics on spiritual matters, they're considered dead. Just as we decorate a dead body, it has no value. So we see that. I sometimes see that when I have to go to do the cremations, and they sometimes have the coffin open, and I look in, and you see that the person who has passed away, you know, they're wearing a beautiful suit. People have gone to a lot of trouble, you know, to decorate the body. You know, the suit, very well dressed for their funeral. You know, and hair is done immaculate. You know, little makeup and a smile. No, they're very, very clever what they do. You actually, when you look, you think, gee, he's a happy. He's doing better than I am. But there's only one problem. You know, that person is dead. You know, it's all the decoration has no real value. So, You know, those words which describe all these materialistic things are described as decoration of a dead body. There's no real value because there's no substance, there's nothing there. They're pleasing to hear about, and just like something may be pleasing to look at, but if it is a dead corpse, it is the real value has gone. Just like Einstein, as long as while he is living, he is considered to be a very, very important and person, and his knowledge. But when the spirit soul leaves the body, then there's no more value placed on that person. There's no more value. The spirit soul has gone. The real asset within the body of the person of Einstein was the spirit soul. When the spirit soul leaves, then that body has no more value. So it is then, just taken away, as quickly as possible, within a few days. That is, cremated or buried or what have you. So, there are, of course, some persons who follow the Vedic literatures, and they may even have the knowledge that we are a spirit soul, different from the material body. And you see that some of the Brahman, those persons who try to realize Brahman, they may have that knowledge, but still without the glorifying topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that knowledge of Brahman is also, practically valueless. There is no spiritual, there is no ananda to be found there. Tiny, tiny little speck. Certainly, they may, in one sense, be better off than materialists who are suffering so much miserable conditions, but because those who are searching after impersonal liberation in Brahman commit spiritual suicide, in one sense there is no real value. And Srila Prabhupada, when he used to travel through India, he noted that because there's no value in this topics about Brahman, if you just speak for hours and days on end about impersonal Brahman, and that we are part of this impersonal Brahman, no one is interested. People might, especially in Kali Yuga, people may take interest for a few moments, but then they'll lose interest. Even the people who are speaking about it lose interest. And therefore Prabhupada used to notice that these impersonalists would then take to hearing and speaking about Srimad Bhagavatam because there's some variety, there's some nectar, there's so many wonderful stories, there's so many pastimes, there's so many variety of topics, and all transcendental, that people are attracted to it. The trouble is, of course, is that they have no access to understand it, and therefore they will speak about Srimad Bhagavatam giving impersonal interpretations. Srila Prabhupada noted that there was one so-called Brahman realized sannyasi, and he would speak Srimad Bhagavatam, and he would say that everything is one with God. So if you are pleased, then God is pleased. So whatever you do, that is pleasing to God, if you are pleased. So in this way, if people, and we see this is why personalities like Sai Baba and that are so popular, because you know, you can take intoxication, you can eat meat, and you can do it all on the name of spirituality, because we are one with God. It means that yes, I'm enjoying this meat, I'm enjoying this wine, like this, and I am pleased, and because I am one with God, then He is pleased. In this way, I am performing bhakti, devotional service to the Supreme Lord, as mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. That's it. That. So, really, you know, they're just they're really just trying to enjoy the same material pleasures, but now under the umbrella of bhakti or devotional service. But as we described, you know, they don't have the sense to see that all, you know, the essential Vedic scriptures are teaching us that, you know, there is no pleasure in these material activities. There's no pleasure in trying to enjoy a dead body. You know, the body itself is dead. Here it describes that even if you go to the heavenly planets, but the same thing, if you go to the heavenly planets, you're just awarded another dead body. You know, you cannot, the body has no life, there's no ability to for the body to actually enjoy, because it is a dead body. But there is a mental concoction of enjoyment. That's described in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, that, you know, the enjoyment in the material world is a mental concoction of enjoyment. That, you know, if we are suffering on the earthly planets and then we go to the heavenly planets, we think, oh, now I am enjoying because I'm no longer on the earthly planets. Now I'm in heaven, I'm enjoying because I'm not on earth. You know, there you live for at most 100 years, and then everything is smashed to pieces and everything is taken off you. But that is a suffering condition. But here in the heavenly planets, we live for 10,000 years of the demigods, and then everything is smashed to pieces and taken off you. So now, you know, I am... It's just a little bit more time before everything is taken off you. But still, there is, you know, the very nature of trying to enjoy through matter is always troublesome. And it is like, you know, if you put a sock on your tongue and try and eat your prasadam. So, you know, it's very hard to get the taste, the real taste, because there's something covering your senses. Now, heavenly enjoyment, you know, perhaps it may be a thinner nylon sock or something, but it's the same principle. You still can't quite, you know, enjoy, because the spiritual senses are still covered. It may be a more subtle covering, granted, but still there is a covering of the senses, and real enjoyment is always frustrated. And the difficulty is that when the pious activities are used up, you still have to come back down to the earthly planets and do it all again. And then, you know, it may be millions and millions of lifetimes of suffering in different species before you ever get back there again. So it's all described as you know, a mental concoction. In as we were describing that, you know, people hear different Vedic literatures, religious literatures, or even mundane literatures, and things proposed how we can enjoy in the material world, but they're very pleasant to hear about, but it's all mental concoction like a dream. There's no real factual happiness there. But because people in the age of Kali are so misguided and so much cheated, it is very, very difficult to, you know, preach or to, you know, teach people about the actual spiritual side of life. You know, people are very dull, they're very lazy towards spiritual activities. They're, you know, always disturbed, very unfortunate, misguided in this way. And they're all in the category of either mudha, naradam, maya priti gyan, one whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, or asuras. Everyone is in this category in Kali Yuga, so it's very, very difficult. As Srila Prabhupada mentions that, you know, in Kali Yuga, people are just a royal addition of animals, as they describe. So, still, Lord Krishna, he appeared just prior to Kali Yuga, and he performed all varieties of activities to demonstrate the nature of spiritual variety, spiritual enjoyment, spiritual activities, the nature of the spiritual world. And he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, which actually, you know, refutes all this pretentious religious principles based on trying to enjoy sense gratification in the material world. And he also inspired Vyas to compile the Srimad Bhagavatam through Narada Muni. So, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, of course, is a preliminary study of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from the personality of Godhead himself. So if we can understand, if we can see clearly the Srimad Bhagavatam, you can actually see Krishna and you can see the spiritual world. And as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.11, that you know, this Srimad Bhagavatam is a transcendental literature meant to purify the consciousness and create a revolution in the consciousness of the whole world, this misdirected civilization, misdirected by being directed towards materialism. So it's actually meant for the paramahamsas. Paramahamsas are those who can perceive the actual essence that can be derived from the human form of life. One who is you know, actually intelligent, they know how to derive the best from everything. So as we described in the beginning, that Srila Prabhupada would say, you make the best use of a bad bargain. And the best use of the bad bargain, of course, means to utilize the human form of life to revive our eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, realize Sri Krishna, and go back to the spiritual world. That's making the best use. Then we have really found some value, and that is, you know, a path back to the spiritual world. Otherwise, everything else. So an intelligent person, the paramahamsas, they're like swans. The swans have the ability to, if there's a mixture of water and milk, they can just take the milk portion. They can separate the water and just take the milk. Just, you know, the nectarian part like that. So very, very expert. And similarly, you know, the devotees, they have that ability that they can just leave aside the yucky material part of existence and just extract the spiritual nectar. Like that. That's a hamsa. In the same way that you know, one can, if gold falls in a filthy place, you can pick it up, you can clean it off. You would still take that gold. It doesn't lose its value. And if one can accept a partner, a husband or a wife, even they're from one may consider that, you know, the family that they're coming from is obscure, or, you know, not considered very high according to material estimations, one can take a partner from that if they have good qualities. You know, that is the essential part, isn't it? The birth and the circumstances of the birth is not very important. If they have the good qualities, one should take that person, you know, as a partner. There's also that one can take nectar from poison. So there are, you know, just like one may extract from the snake the poison in order to create various antidotes. And, you know, there are many different poisons which they use. I think quinine's another one they use for malaria, something like that. Yeah, that doctor here. So, and of course, one can also take a good lesson from someone even if they're considered untouchable. So sometimes people are considered to be very low even in their habits and their birth, but if they're giving the proper lesson, you should still take that lesson. I remember about a year ago I was walking up Elizabeth Street, and sitting on the side of the road, sort of back up against the shop, was this hobo. You know, very smelly, you know, dirty, filthy clothes. He just lived in those clothes. And, you know, beard and food in his beard. And a very, very moochy, you know. And I think he may have had, you know, his little bottle of something. It's about the plonk there. Then as I walked past him, I was dressed as, you know, as a devotee. As I walked past, he yelled out, he goes, "Harry Ball, have you chanted your 16 rounds yet?" And I looked, and I thought, I looked at my bee bag, I thought, I haven't chanted them all. And I make sure I get my 16 rounds done. And I stopped, you know, and I, you know, like, is this some saint in disguise? Is this really a hobo? But I still don't know. He said he used to associate with the devotees, you know, many years ago, and then, you know, somehow he ended up like that, you know, by leaving that association. But still, you know, you can take that instruction. It was a good instruction. You know, make sure I get my 16 rounds done. That doesn't matter where it comes from. It's always a good instruction. So this is a sign of intelligence, that one can always take the best from everything and leave aside the other part, which is, you know, to be overlooked. Unfortunately, the materialists, they do the opposite. They take the muck and leave aside the gold. If they see someone who is very nicely decorated, even though they have terrible qualities, but they are, you know, from high birth and, you know, wealthy, and they, you know, from all external appearances, they will accept that person as their partner, even though their qualities are despicable and cause them a lifetime of trouble. But they look good. So therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see here that Krishna is explaining to us that we should, you know, leave aside this pursuit of material pleasures, whether in this world or even in heaven, and really take to spiritual life. So this is the message of the Bhagavad. Of course, there are two types of Bhagavad. One is the book Bhagavat, and one is the person Bhagavat. Bhagavat means that which has nothing to do with anything that's not related to Krishna. The Bhagavat, everything is related to Krishna. So Srimad Bhagavatam, everything here is related to Krishna. Everything is bringing us back to the spiritual world. There is nothing in Srimad Bhagavatam which is misdirecting us towards searching out after heavenly pleasures in this world or the next. And the Bhagavat, of course, must be heard from the person Bhagavat, as we describe. If someone is a non-devotee, we should not hear the Bhagavat from them. We should hear the Bhagavat from people who are, their life, everything is also in relationship to the Supreme Lord, and they're living by the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to create a society of Bhagavats, where all the devotees are very competent to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. He described that it's not that difficult to become a pure devotee. To become a pure devotee, you chant your 16 rounds, you follow the four regular principles, and you serve Krishna for his pleasure without material desire. That's, the process of becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. And if one does that, they actually become a Bhagavat, and they can maintain a very powerful spiritual strength. As described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, I think the 13th chapter, Yudhisthira said to Vidura that, you are actually a Tirthapad, you are a personified place of pilgrimage. That wherever you are is a place of pilgrimage. And in fact, wherever you go, you turn that place into a place of pilgrimage. It's not necessary that where a Bhagavat goes, that in order to turn it into a place of pilgrimage, they have to, spend big amounts of money and establish a big temple, so much costly arrangements for big yajnas or ceremonies. No, there's no need, because the Bhagavat, simply because they have Krishna within their heart, wherever they go, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is there, and wherever they go, they're reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam is identical with Krishna. So in this way, the Lord is within the heart, and the Lord becomes manifest to everyone else when they hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So they're actually, place of pilgrimage, personified. Actually, Narottam Das Thakur says that, especially in the age of Kali, to go to the holy places of pilgrimage is another form of speculation, mental speculation. You see that many people, apart from the devotees, but many people go to the holy places, and their idea is that when they go there, they become purified of the sinful reaction. In fact, they leave their sinful reactions in those holy places. And by becoming purified, and even they may come to a temple, which is also a holy place. They come to a temple not to please Krishna or Radharani, but because they know when they come to the temple, all their sinful reactions will be left there, and that will give them a good opportunity to go to the heavenly planets and enjoy like anything. That's a fact. There's no devotional aspect to it at all. But the Bhagavats, the pure devotees, when they go to the holy places, they actually purify the holy place from all the sinful reaction that were left there by others. And that's what surcharges. It's actually because the pure devotees go to the holy place, they continually surcharge those holy places with a spiritual, powerful spiritual atmosphere. Therefore we see that, before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Vrindavan, what was there? The farmers and the rice paddy. Huh? is still Vrindavan, but there is no the spiritual atmosphere until the devotees come. And of course Lord Chaitanya, you know, the original devotee, he came there and he rolled around in those kuns and in the rice paddies, and then everyone is thinking, oh, there's something else here but rice. So, and then of course he sent the Goswamis, you know, to Vrindavan, and the Goswamis, now there are thousands and thousands, is spiritually surcharged with Krishna consciousness. It's not just a place of rice paddies. So without the devotees, they spiritually surcharge the, you know, the dharms have their effect anyway, but for the ordinary people, they need the presence of the devotees to derive the real benefit even from the holy places. So of course, you know, we get many people who, you know, even come to the temples, and you'll find that many, many people come to the Hare Krishna temples, or they go to churches, or they go to mosques, completely for some materialistic reason. They have completely missed the essence of life, that you go there and you know, you hear from the Bhagavats, you hear from the devotees. Of course, I come across this a lot with the jagyas, that, you know, many people ring up and they want a jagya for, you know, to this planet is causing them trouble, and you know someone's birthday, and you know they want the blessings, and you know this and that, many different materialistic reasons. But I have to be very careful, of course, representing ISKCON, that I do not create the offence of the holy name, that I utilise the holy name as a what's the eighth offence, to consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to be one of the ritualistic ceremonies which are often the Vedas of fruitive activities, Kama Kanda. So I have to be very careful that I don't create that offence, and I also have to be very careful that I don't encourage other people to utilise the holy name somehow or another as part of a ritualistic ceremony to derive material results. So therefore in every single ceremony I make a point to speak a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, and before I start anything I make sure that they understand that we are here to although we may have come for different material reasons, we're going to put that aside and we're just going to offer some service to the Lord for His pleasure. Automatically the benefits come, but you know, our purpose should not be to come to a temple or to perform jagyas just for the material benefit. We should always understand that whenever we perform a religious ceremony, whenever we come to the temple, whenever we go to a holy place, our purpose should always be to put aside our, become purified of our material consciousness, and derive the actual benefit, which is to associate with devotees and hear about the ultimate goal of going back to the spiritual world. And I quite always, you know, try to mention that, you know, these ceremonies, they purify the consciousness, and when that purification is complete, you won't have to take birth. You know, they have the little children, they do the hair cutting. I tell them, you know, that this is purification because of our worship and the hair cutting. But when that is complete, your little girl, your little boy will not have to take another birth in this world, but will be able to become purified, to always be Krishna conscious and go back to the spiritual world. That's the purpose of these ceremonies, like that. And they're looking, they think, oh, we just come here for a haircut, you know. But as devotees, of course, we have to be very, very careful that we don't commit offences to the holy name. And we also, we have to understand that Srila Prabhupada established these temples as an opportunity for people to come and hear and chant about Krishna. All the facility we have is for that purpose, to, you know, hear and chant. So we always have to, certainly there are different, you know, methods which we use to attract people, but when people, having been attracted and come here and feeling comfortable, then we should take the first opportunity to very expertly, let them hear about the real essence of life, the real value of life, the real value of coming to a Hare Krishna temple, the real value of pilgrimage, the real value of a jagya. Otherwise, if we don't do that, then, you know, I may as well be pouring ghee on cold ashes, because that's about in fact, there's a Arjun said that to I think Yudhisthira, and he said that I am the same Arjun after Krishna disappeared. I am the same Arjun. I have the same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, the same armor. I am the same great warrior that all the kings previously glorified. And of course he was had the duty to care for Krishna's 16,108 wives. I think he was taking them to Vrindavan or something, but he couldn't do it. And he said, I am the same person, but the difference is because Krishna is gone, there is no value to anything anymore. All of these things have no value because Krishna is absent. So of course Krishna was showing that even if you're Arjun, what to speak of us, even if you're Arjun, if Krishna is absent, everything has no value. And then Arjun said, it is just like pouring, ghee on ashes, or putting seeds in barren land. Without Krishna, there is no value like this. And that is the same that is being described here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any comments or questions.
One point. You are saying scientists, now they are trying to develop a bionic eye, like bionic ears.
Mm.
Now they are making bionic eyes. They are putting electrodes in the retina, inside the eye.
Yes.
And they have a handheld processor.
Yes.
And then the waves are going to the brain.
Yes.
They are trying, they will make, they think they will make everybody.
Yeah, now they're very, very expert at these things. I heard on the news about 2 weeks ago that they now claim, see previously, up until now they've never claimed that they can create life, they now claim that they have created life. Up to about, it's a world news, up to about 2 weeks ago they actually claim that we have created life. Of course it is not, if you look at what they're doing, they're still... they're not creating life, but they say that they have. Yeah. So I mean, with that, of course, they can create the if the lens, or the camera is not working properly, they can very expertly connect it up to the brain, what have you. So the electricity is there and what have you. But still, they can't create the seer who's looking through the lens. That's what they don't understand.
The fire is supposed to be the mouth of Vishnu.
Yes, yeah, the fire.
What is Vishnu?
He's asking that in the Karma Kanda section, there's still, how do they look at the fire? The fire is, of course, a form of Agni. Vishnu is also there. We invite Vishnu within the fire through the mantras. And Agni takes those offerings, and then after purifying them through the fire, they are then passed to Vishnu. And then Vishnu distributes that prasad all the various demigods and what have you as Vishnu Prasad, and then they will accept Vishnu Prasad. previously, I heard a tape the other day, previously Srila Prabhupada said that the Brahmanas previously whether they're performing Kamakanda or what have you, but whenever they performed a sort of fire jagya or a samskara, they always had a shalagram, and that shalagram made sure that Vishnu Tattva was the prime recipient of that jagya. So, you know, previously all brahmanas, you know, had shalagram, and shalagram is always understood to be Vishnu Tattva. And whenever there was a jagya or a ceremony, they had a shalagram present to make sure that people understood that it's coming to Vishnu. And that. And of course, you know, every mantra begins with Om, which represents, you know, as the sound vibration of Vishnu. But you know, there are within all the samskaras, you still the various demigods have their role to play. It's not that they're absent, and through the various mantras and that, you recognize the role that they are playing, and some glorification is given to them. But always, you know, with the understanding that they're assisting, serving Vishnu at that. But the difficulty is that people these days, they, because they're so intent on a material benefit, you know, they just leave out the Vishnu Tattva part, and they just, their worship just stops at a particular demigod. And they think, well, you know, there's no use going through Vishnu because I'm really not interested in the spiritual side of things, and it's this demigod who ultimately, you know, is, you know, awarding some particular result. So they just, you know, why bother with Vishnu? We'll just go straight to the demigod, and our worship can go to him, you know, a little extra worship for him, and then we'll get the result. But they don't realize that, you know, the demigods don't worship like that. They will not accept offerings unless it is Vishnu Prasad. Even if you do Kali Puja or anything, you know, even people who worship Kali to eat meat, still, as Srila Prabhupada points out, the main worship in that ceremony still goes to Vishnu. And then, you know, there is the worship of Kali. So, you know, even if they're doing, but now they just leave out Vishnu and just worship Kali, you know, because they don't, I'm not interested in the spiritual aspect, we'll just be happy here in the material world. But they don't realize that none of the demigods will actually accept their offerings. They only accept, you know, there must be the worship of Vishnu. Of course, Lord Vishnu doesn't eat the meat, but even Kali doesn't actually accept the meat. When you worship Kali, Prabhupada says she doesn't accept the meat either. She distributes that to all the ghosts and hobgoblins and all her associates. They eat it. Like that. And she doesn't eat it. So, you know, people are very misguided in their understanding of things. And they just ultimately cause themselves a lot of trouble. But still, they're better off to come to the Hare Krishna temple, even if their intention is completely wrong, because then there's the opportunity that a devotee can put them right. You know, sometimes people ask me to do a particular ceremony, and I tell them that I tell them how it should be done. And if they don't want to do that, then I say, well, I can't do that, and I just won't do it, you know, if it's improper. And especially, you know, ceremonies like giving first grains, you know, we actually invite the Lord, who, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 15, I think it's the 14th verse, describes how Vaishvanara, the Lord, you know, Vishnu Tattva, sits within the as the fire of digestion. So when we do a ceremony, we're actually inviting the Lord to preside over the digestion and protect that person. So I have to make sure, and I ask them that, you know, if I can only do this ceremony if you promise me that you're not going to eat meat. Because I'm not inviting Lord Vishnu to come there, you know, because he won't accept it. And therefore, I'm just, you know, as I may as well be pouring ghee on cold ashes, because you're not going to get the benefit. And I said that to one person, and he said, oh, you know, I ate meat, but my children won't, this child won't. And, you know, like I was all set up, and, I sort of drilled him a little bit, you know, so you're going to promise me, so you're eating meat, but you're promising that this child will not eat meat. You know, no, we promise. And the husband and the wife, yeah, we promise. Like this. So I did the ceremony, and then after the ceremony, they didn't pay. They gave a check that bounced. Right, because they're thinking, you know, that they couldn't keep their promise. So they were thinking, because I told them, if that child eats meat, there's no value to the ceremony. So they're thinking, well, you know, afterwards, she probably will eat meat, so there's no value, so we won't pay. Like that. So the check bounced. Yeah. So, we have to be very careful. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Just a comment on that point, that the scientists have created that they simply transplanted the DNA. That's what they've done.
They transplanted the DNA, yeah.
They've taken the DNA out and they've
synthetic DNA. Yeah, that. It just, you know, It depends what they consider to be, you know, if they consider these chemicals to be the components of life, then they say, yes, we have created life. But, you know, they're still thinking that some certain chemicals in their combination are life, and because they put them in and it showed signs of life, they say that, yes. Where previously those, you know, usually what they do is they take things and put it into something which is already showing signs of life. Right? So therefore, they know that they're not creating life. Now they're taking something, putting into something which is showing no signs of life, and then putting their chemicals in, and then it's showing signs of life, therefore they're saying, we've created life, like that. Any other comments or questions? Sorry, all good, should have probably...